Support for Newsworthy comes from Inlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at Inlivion.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Monday, April 14th, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. Charlotte-Mecklenburg police are investigating three murders from the weekend. The first was a Saturday night shooting in Uptown. Officers responded to a call at about 10:30 on East Trade Street near the Charlotte Transportation Center. They found 31-year-old Qualo Trevon Daniels with multiple gunshot wounds. He was pronounced dead at a local hospital. On Sunday at about 2 a.m., police responded to a call on Wallingford Street in West Charlotte near Woodlawn Road. There, they found 37-year-old Stanley Alfonso Williams with stab wounds. He was later pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. The third incident was at about 6 Sunday morning on Eastway Drive near North Tryon. Officers responding to the call found 23-year-old Javier Lee Martinez Hernandez with multiple gunshot wounds. He was pronounced dead at the scene. No details about the circumstances of the murders were released. Last week, CMPD's quarterly crime update showed violent crime down in the city as compared to the first quarter of 2024, with 20 homicides compared to 32 in the first quarter of last year. The North Carolina Supreme Court on Friday issued a mixed ruling in Republican Jefferson Griffin's election challenge against Democratic incumbent Allison Riggs for a seat on the state's highest court. Steve Harrison has this update.
In a 4-2 decision, the court overturned the Court of Appeals order last week that more than 60,000 North Carolina voters must cure their registrations to have their votes count. Griffin had challenged their ballots because he said their registrations lacked identification, like a driver's license number. Those voters won't have their ballots rejected. But the Supreme Court did uphold a requirement that more than 5,000 overseas voters from four counties provide a photo ID to have their ballots count. The voters have 30 days to do that. It also rejected 276 ballots from voters who have never lived in North Carolina. Riggs leads Griffin by 734 votes after two recounts. It's possible the Supreme Court's ruling could change the final tally enough for Griffin to overtake Riggs. In her dissent, Democratic Justice Anita Earls wrote that, quote, "Some would call it stealing the election. Others might call it a bloodless coup. But by whatever name, no amount of smoke and mirrors makes it legitimate." Riggs is expected to appeal in federal court. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
North Carolina Governor Josh Stein addressed local and regional officials in Asheville on Friday. He focused on Hurricane Helene recovery, wildfires, and funding for Western North Carolina's future. Stein attended the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners meeting on his 100th day in office. He said the General Assembly's recent passage of a $524 million Helene recovery spending measure is nowhere near enough, but it's a start.
In the weeks ahead, I'm going to be sending to the General Assembly a second Helene budget focused on the ongoing housing needs, support for small businesses, revenue replacement for its local governments, and desperately needed wildfire prevention efforts.
Last month, leftover debris from Helene, along with dry conditions, fueled massive wildfires in the region that caused hundreds to evacuate their homes. Stein said funding for fire prevention is key.
That means investing more in debris removal and land and waterway rehabilitation so we can reduce the risk of wildfires. We also have to prepare for future flooding by prioritizing resilience in our floodplains and protecting our wetlands, which help absorb water flow.
Stein added the actions the state takes now can help the region prevent future economic and personal hardship. Piedmont Lithium and Australian Sayona Mining announced Thursday that the name of the soon-to-be-merged companies will be Elevra Lithium. Piedmont Lithium is headquartered in Belmont, but operates mines in Ghana and Quebec, where it already jointly owns North American Lithium with Sayona. Piedmont Lithium has already received a mining permit for 1,500 acres in Gaston County to mine the mineral spodumene, which contains lithium. Both Piedmont and Sayona's stock price fell precipitously during the summer of 2024, shortly before they announced the merger in November. Piedmont stated online that the companies will merge in mid-2025, pending regulatory and shareholder approval. A Duplin County Republican wants to limit where large solar projects can be built in North Carolina. The bill would slash tax incentives that have been in place for more than 15 years. Representative Jimmy Dixon says he doesn't want solar projects to be built on active farmland. His bill would ban the State Utilities Commission from approving those projects. Dixon's bill also strikes a property tax exclusion for 80% of the value of solar equipment. That means property taxes would jump on large solar farms that have already been built. Some conservatives oppose the bill. Those include former Senator Jim Perry, a Lenoir County Republican who's now a lobbyist for Strata Clean Energy.
I oppose this bill as a private citizen who is an investor and landowner. My family's investment portfolio includes investment in solar. This bill basically attempts what is the equivalent to an unfair taking of my land, and that is disturbing to me. This action represents a complete and total disregard for my private property rights.
The North Carolina Association of County Commissioners and Department of Agriculture support the bill. Dixon said he's open to tweaking the bill's language. A book fair aimed at showcasing Black authors and improving Black literacy took place in Charlotte over the weekend. Elvis Meniese has more. Wake up, everybody,
no sleeping in bed. More than a dozen people gathered at the Methodist Home Recreation Center in East Charlotte for the Black Child Book Fair on Saturday. This is the third time the fair has taken place in Charlotte. Daryl Harvey founded the event in 2019 for two reasons.
One, give parents of Black children, parents of blended families, teachers of those children, social workers of those children, a resource to find books that they wouldn't find anywhere else. Number two, to give the independent Black author a resource to market their work.
The fair featured nine authors from around the country. Their books focused on empowering children, Black fathers, and Black history. Retired social worker Susan Miller purchased a book on the civil rights movement out of concern for her granddaughters and a co-worker's niece.
I'm not sure that it's going to be taught as much in schools, if at all, in the time periods we're living in now.
The Black Child Book Fair plans to hit 15 cities this year, with its next stop in Minneapolis. Elvis Meniese, WFA News.
The Trump administration's tariffs have shaken the global economy and disrupted many Americans' financial futures. Tommy Tomlinson, in his On My Mind commentary, says the tariffs are a misguided search for a simpler world.
When I moved to the Charlotte area in 1989, North Carolina's three-legged stool was just about to crack. The three-legged stool, that's what they call tobacco, textiles, and furniture. The three industries that carried North Carolina's economy through much of the 20th century. Even before I got here, it was all fading to dust. I got to see the last of it. I walked a tobacco field down east with a farmer who was trying to figure out what to grow next. I went to Kannapolis as the massive Cannon Mill closed for good, and I watched its smokestacks fall. The work, by and large, went overseas. It makes sense to just wish we could bring it all back. I actually understand the gut feeling behind what Donald Trump is doing with these massive tariffs on products from other countries. Now, for Trump, I think, it's simply about power and leverage. But for the rest of us, there's also a playground sense of justice. It's about reclaiming the work that used to belong to us. Lord, I wish it was that simple. The most immediate complication is Trump's fundamental instability. Just look at last week. He jacked up tariffs on nearly all our trading partners, then reversed course and reduced tariffs on everybody but China. The financial markets jerked up and down as a result, jeopardizing trillions of dollars in investors' cash and regular people's retirement funds. There's no way to predict what Trump will do next. He's like a weird uncle playing got your nose with the entire global economy. That's not likely to persuade anybody to invest in building new factories over here. But beyond that, we have to be honest about other complicated realities. We say we'll be willing to buy American-made goods made by American workers paid a fair and living wage, but we will also be furious if we can no longer buy cheap t-shirts and toys at Walmart. It does feel unfair to export our jobs to countries where people work for less and are exploited more. But that also helps many of those countries build sound economies and make them less of a threat to us. It stinks that American workers have a harder time finding blue-collar jobs. But it's also true that some of them find other jobs where they can make a good living and not break their backs. Again, it's complicated. I wish it wasn't. I wish tobacco didn't cause cancer, and cotton dust didn't cause brown lung disease, and that everybody could afford well-made American furniture. I wish our three-legged stool could have held up forever. But we don't live on the playground anymore. Navigating this complicated world requires grown-ups making grown-up decisions. And right now, we are running a deficit in grown-ups.
Tommy Tomlinson's On My Mind represents his opinion, not the opinion of WFAE. You can also listen to Tommy's podcast, Southbound, where he interviews notable Southerners. And for Monday, April 14th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.